This is Kate Harness with 307 at Radio, and this morning I'm visiting with Bill Hawley. Hello, Bill. Nice to see you again.
Good morning, Kate.
And Lorraine Steppy. And you guys have a lot of experience, both personal and professional, in the area of suicide. Unfortunately, our community is no stranger at all to suicide, and I think pretty much everybody has at least one or maybe more connections with a loved one, a family member who may themselves have committed suicide, or with other people who are experiencing the loss and the trauma of that kind of loss. And so we're going to spend a moment today just talking about maybe how grief and suicide is slightly different and what people can do about it, because you have a support group which has been running for, I believe, about a year.
Yes.
And you have people, you know, they're welcome to come and just discuss this thing, because there are some very unique aspects to grieving suicide. Maybe you'd like to explain what you think they are.
So briefly, our group meets at the Pines Counseling Center at 175 Pine Street, coincidentally, here in beautiful Buffalo, the third Thursday of each month at 6:30. And we usually are here for about an hour, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more, depending on what is needed. And the makeup of the group, the design of the group, is very intentional. I approach it from the perspective of a loss survivor, having lost too many friends and family members to suicide, like many people in our community. And Lorraine, my friend Lorraine, is obviously a therapist and a counselor here.
Yes.
And she can speak specifically to your question about the complicated grief that surrounds a loss by suicide.
Right. And it's a loss that, you know, we do a lot of sense making. We try to make sense of why they died. And, you know, what we know is, and this is really important for anybody who has experienced a suicide loss, and this could be a family member, a coworker, neighbor, it doesn't matter who. We hurt from all of those losses. But that when someone dies by suicide, it's because they're trying to get rid of a pain. They're trying to get away from a pain that is so, so huge. So they're not thinking about everybody else or their job or how it's going to impact everyone else, because their brain doesn't go there. They just want to be away. And also, if someone is drinking, that adds to that ease of going ahead and acting on suicidal ideation, those thoughts of suicide. So we do a lot of what happened, was I responsible, what's my role. I mean, people, there's so much that goes through their head. So the survivors of suicide loss, you know, coming together with people who have experienced the same sort of pain is really important. And sometimes, now I came from Cody and I supported that group in Cody for the 5 years prior to moving to Buffalo 2 years ago. And when I moved to Buffalo, then Bill and I started having this conversation about starting it. And my idea is, like, we just have to show up. That's all we have to do. And people come. And that ability to talk and to have support from people who've been through the same experience. And sadly and unfortunately, Bill and I both have been affected by suicide. So even though I'm a therapist, you know, I did this for years without being affected closely by suicide. And now that I have, I'm kind of in a different role, but it's also really important. And the groups have gotten, you know, we've had groups very large, 8 to 12 people, down to just a couple. And I always believe who is supposed to be there is there.
Yep.
And here's the other thing. Sometimes we have people who have family members or friends that died years ago, even up to 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And something happens and it all comes back and they need that support too. So the one thing about grief, any kind of grief, this could even be losing a spouse or, you know, any other death, is that there's no time limit. You know, so when people are like, that was 2 months ago, you should be over it or get over it, that is not possible, because how long is the person dead? So anybody out there who is affected by a grief needs to know you can grieve for as long as you need to. And it's not like the grief gets any less. We just learn to handle it better. Like our capacity to sit in that grief becomes bigger and we feel like we can handle it better. But we will always be sad over certain griefs. But somebody that dies by suicide, that grief is different, because there's so many questions and it's so tragic and it's so painful. And, you know, the people that I work with, because I work with people actively who are suicidal, I am trained in a couple different methods to manage collaboratively with doctors and other people and family members to manage suicidal ideation. It does mean people have to hang out with me more during the week, and sometimes I'm calling people on the weekend, and we use the 988 number. You know, we actually make a safety plan, and we know that if we can get people through the first 3 to 4 days, they do better. And then if we can kind of look at the drivers behind why they would be having suicidal ideation. So from working with all of those people, they don't see how this could hurt other people. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it specifically to hurt someone. That is very rare. They're just trying to get away from their own personal pain.
And sometimes they may be just, they try to end their pain, but they also may think that everybody is better off without them.
Absolutely.
Correct.
And in fact, you know, and I've had quite a lot of personal involvement with families of people who have, you know, families who've experienced suicide directly. And they say that that person had often indicated that they thought that everybody would find their life so much easier if they weren't in it, because they were complicating their lives and making it so difficult because of their own difficulties and emotions.
But the opposite is actually true.
Well, and that is my personal observation as well, that
that's,
you never resolve, because you're always wondering, especially if somebody has not left any reason or clear identification or a farewell letter, you're constantly wondering what your role and position was, and whether that, even if that was active, whether you said the wrong thing or whether you didn't say anything, or should I have shown up, should I have called, should I not have done this, that difficulty in resolving the making sense of it, as you describe it, Lorraine, is you know, a burden which is left forever. So is it possible to make peace with your grief in a suicide situation?
I think for me, in my experience, having lost a very good friend to suicide, that tinge of guilt kind of lingers. Because we as human beings tend to place blame, and oftentimes we look inward and we blame ourselves. You know, what could I have said? What could I have done?
Right.
And that's not comfortable. I mean, it's an uncomfortable piece of the grief.
Right.
And when I think about supporting loss survivors and the support I've received over the years, it's part healing and part remembering. So I will always remember the fun times I had with my friend, the trips to Deadwood, the fishing, all the things, because that brings me joy and that brings me happiness. The fact that he's no longer here with us, that's part of my sadness and part of my grief. That's not ever going to go away. And Lorraine said that so beautifully before. But you learn to live through the grief and you remember the love. And so for me, that's where, I don't know if you call it peace, Kate, but that's where the healing happens.
Or maybe a little acceptance that I couldn't do something. I did the best I could, and sometimes then you think of all the things that you could have done. But at the moment, we were doing the best that we could with that person. And suicide is preventable. Some people say, oh, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. That is not true, because I work with people all the time. And when I say to them, are you thinking about killing yourself? And I use those words because some people think that killing themselves isn't painful. You know, so if I say, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Well, that's a whole different question. I ask the question, and I've had people who just break down in tears. I've been suicidal for 20 years, and no one has ever, like, done a safety plan and listened to me. They're like, you are okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're not okay. And to have that acceptance that you're not okay, and that I'm going to sit with you and you're not okay, and I'm still going to like you, even if it's sort of hard for both of us, we're going to sit there. And I know that, you know, there are people that even if I'm helping, they could kill themselves. You know, I haven't actually had that happen yet. And, you know, while I'm working with someone, and I know that that could happen, but I hold their hope. And, you know, if someone out there is suicidal, actually, you know, meeting with someone, and sometimes when it's so bad, I'm like, do you think I could just hold your hope until you have a long enough time that I can give it back to you, that you can have your own hope back? You know, there's things that we do that help, listening, all of that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't help when they're already gone. So we need to help the people who have missed someone, who are missing someone, to honor that. And for those people who, like, you don't know what to do when someone's died by suicide. And I have friends from the previous group that talk about when they're going down an aisle in the grocery store and somebody like starts coming down the aisle and then turns around and walks away. That is so painful. You know, you may not know what to say to them. And saying something really stupid is probably better than nothing.
Yeah,
but right. Just saying, I'm sorry. You know, reaching out to people, checking on them, acknowledging their pain. But it's a hard thing. So sometimes we ignore people that are in grief, any kind of grief, because you don't know what to say. I don't think we equip ourselves with what to say in general to people. And sometimes just being there. And I know what it feels like. Well, you know, most people don't know what it feels like, so don't say that. You maybe right. don't know what it feels like to lose a kid or lose a parent or lose anybody by any means. You may not know that, but this must, you know, saying, this must really hurt, and I'm very sorry, and I'm here if you need anything, and check on people. Don't just leave them. People that are in pain are not going to reach out to you.
Mm.
So we need to check. And when people are grieving, we need to, you know, check on in on them right now, and then in months, and even in years. How is it going? Using people's names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friends that helped me with the survivors group in Cody, you know, I would use their son's name, David, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not your son, but the acknowledgement that mm-hmm. David died and that they have pain. And, you know, acknowledging that
I think it
keeps going on.
It's sometimes people think that if you don't bring up, and this could just be in any form of grief,
right.
That if you don't bring up that person's name, you sort of, it's almost like they're just ignored and you just don't go to that area, that's better, that in some way you might be upsetting the grieving person by talking about that. In fact, when you're grieving, you want that acknowledgement.
Yeah.
You want
yeah.
people to recognize that they were important yeah. and loved and cherished and treasured.
Yeah, and that you had a son, that you had a friend, you know, that we're there, we're hearing you.
So is there a stigma associated, do you think? Do you think that people who are, you know, have been associated in some way, who have died by suicide, that people feel some sense of shame or stigma, or is it an extra difficulty?
I think there's absolutely a stigma around it, and
yeah.
that's where that emotion of shame comes in. And that's why what Lorraine and I try to do here at the Pines Counseling Center is create a safe space where people can talk openly and honestly, where they'll be supported and they'll be cared for. When we have shared lived experience, that's just a different kind of comfort because we get it. And so that's really, you know, when I think about creating a place of unconditional belonging, that's what our hope and our goal is to provide that for folks who have this complicated grief around suicide loss. And so, yeah, how can we break down those barriers of stigma and how can we address and talk about blame, shame, and guilt? That's
yeah.
what our group is
you're,
really
You're talking
really
about opening up about some very personal and emotional aspects. The feelings, you know, are quite difficult not only to feel, but also then to share, especially with strangers.
Right.
You know, why would somebody feel that, you know, they should sit down in this group?
Well, one of the things is we do start out with kind of a privacy statement. We don't want anything that's said in the group ever on the street. Like, they have to agree to that. And the group is free, so anyone can come in. And usually people that need to be here come. But that is, and you don't have to talk. Some people just listen. Some
mm-hmm.
people listen for months and months. We do it once a month. And don't say, and then when they're ready, they'll talk. But when other people are talking about their grief and what's gone on and how they're managing, it is helpful to others. Now, we do kind of stay out of the exact details of what happened because that can be very triggering to people. You know, so that's something that if someone's having a hard time, they need to do with, you know, their own people that they talk to or their own individual therapist, you know, because that's more intimate and we don't want to trigger people with really graphic stuff that isn't good. So it becomes this safe thing around that sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
and that missing them and that sense making, and then how do we kind of heal and make meaning of their life?
So when you think for a moment about the reality of suicide, somebody has to find somebody. Mm-hmm. Is there a special, unique place for those people? What happens for those people? Because is a very traumatic
right. So if
moment.
You're walking in on that, I mean, what you've got burned in your memory banks is mm-hmm. an extreme trauma. That is a very significant view of something. It's very akin to like people in the military and coming, some of the things that they see. There are individual therapies like EMDR and brain spotting that help to take those memories and put it from an active place where you are tearful and feeling everything to, yes, this happened, and it helps the memories go back into long-term storage and aren't sitting out there as a trauma. And that can be for all kinds of things. But if someone goes in, because someone has to walk in there, and by the way, first responders are also some of the people that are affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
And if those pictures keep coming up, or those feelings or those emotions, when you talk about something months later and you get emotional and sweaty and your heart beats fast and you just want to fall apart or you want to go drink or do, you know, just your that reaction is so big, that is a memory that is not put away and not processed. And that is something, there are many therapists in the area that are able to handle that do some of those trauma therapies. And if you've been to therapy and you're like, that wasn't that great, try another therapist. There's lots of people.
Yeah.
Some of us are older, some are younger. We all have different skills and different things that we work in. And with this recording, there will be an attachment of different things, and one of them will be the individual therapists and group therapy places in the community.
And now, I mean, COVID brought lots of things, but it did also bring telehealth.
Oh, yes.
And so you can do that in a wholly different way, completely in private. You don't even have to have your car parked outside
Absolutely.
Somewhere. You
yeah.
can do it completely in your own time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people get a lot from that. Other people, it doesn't work for.
Yeah, it goes both ways. And, you know, if you don't want to come here on the third Thursday of the month, there is some online stuff, and we'll post that too through the Alliance for Hope, where you can go to support groups online, and there are different, you know, we're talking about suicide today, but there are support groups for, you know, different losses. The
mm-hmm.
Summit Church here in town has a grief share group that they have, so contacting there that they meet, and that is very, very helpful to people. You know, if you lost a child, there's some special support groups around the, you know, supporting parents with lost a child.
The sort of Wyoming psyche doesn't necessarily open up. We have that cowboy up, you know, just...
Yeah. Push through. Yep.
You
we
know,
got
just,
it.
Just,
we're okay.
You know, I'll be fine. You know, stoicism.
Yeah.
There's that. There's also, as we've talked about, you know, the stigma of this. But we also live in a very small community where everybody is connected. And we're talking about asking people to come and share some very personal and difficult things. And another aspect, which often is within grief, is anger too. And to have a safe space where you can be angry as well. Because really, anger is hurt in another form.
Yeah, coming out a different direction.
And grief is hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Grief is loss and sorrow. Mm-hmm. And with this, also maybe, you know, that inexplicable way of just coming to terms with it.
Right, right.
That you so many things you just didn't know because you weren't in that person's mind.
And it's not like you go forever. You go as long as you want. Some people come one or two times and they just feel a lot of peace. And others, they come, you know, a longer period of time. It doesn't matter. And others choose to seek out individual help. But avoiding this pain, you know, spending time in it for a while, you know, a few months. But if it's still there and it's causing sleep problems and emotional problems, doing something about it is a good idea. And I know that you can go to your doctor too and get stuff for depression and anxiety and that kind of stuff. But really, we want to get to the root of why it's there, because it's not going to go away if we don't address it. So that's part of coming and being here. It's a great place to start. If it's overwhelming and you need to do something else with an individual person, we've got a list of providers there too. So there's some lots of options for people in our community. And with that stigma, this is around all mental health things. It is very hard. And so we all need to talk about it. I love it when my clients are like, yeah, so-and-so said they were seeing you. And it's like the cool thing to come see Lorraine in a workplace or at a school. And I'm like, what? You guys were talking about me? And I feel kind of embarrassed. And then I'm like, no, you're talking about it. You're helping your friends get help because you got help.
Yeah.
And so that's what we need, is people to be brave enough to say, yeah, I went. And some people aren't going to be, and that's okay, and it can be private. But it's kind of heartwarming when somebody comes in and says, my friend so-and-so sent me to you because they were getting some help. And I think that happens with all the therapists here in town, you know, is they're just tickled when a friend sends someone else because they care for them. But we have to talk about it, you know. And if you're having thoughts of suicide, talk to someone. If someone talks to you about, like, I'm thinking about killing myself, take it seriously. If you don't know what else to do, call 911, tell the police, they'll help you. But seeking help, helping them find, you know, a therapist, someone, they can go to Bill. He knows where to go. They can come to me. I work with people who are suicidal. I don't always have room, but we find people. You know, that's why we have a list of mental health providers. So we have lots of resources for everyone. Yeah.
Maybe you just touch before we conclude, maybe you touch for a moment, we were talking earlier about how sometimes people who are feeling very suicidal, they do think that the world would be better off without them. From personal experience, I know that sitting with families who have been through that trauma, that they are not better off.
And I have never seen anybody a suicide with the many, many that they're like, yeah, it's better. I've never seen that. Ever, ever, ever.
And that's also why Dr. Thomas Joyner, who's one of our leading, quote-unquote, suicidologists, he calls it perceived burdensomeness. So it's the perception that my family would be better off without me here. And just as Lorraine has said, it's nothing could be further from...
But the family wants you to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they would be better off without you. Like, let's get a little help. Let's talk to someone. You know, let's do something. You know, what's behind this? Where is the pain coming from? Can we work on that so that you can have a great life and the people around you can still have you in the world?
And is that possible? Do you ever really move? Can somebody actually move along away from those very depressed, disturbed feelings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chronic suicidal ideation is actually very rare, but there are people that have that. And it is something that sometimes we realize as a therapist that that is what's keeping them alive, but we keep them safe and they actually do really well. But most people, we get them through that, you know, first few days and then address what's going on. I mean, I've had dozens and dozens and dozens of people over the years who go on and they're just wonderful. Or somebody shows up at my office door, gives me a hug, and I'm like, oh my goodness. And they're like, thank you for giving me my wife back. You know, she's now taking care of the kids, doing this stuff. I don't know what you did, but thank you. And some of it is just working on past traumas or hurts, you know, or little bits of bullying, ugliness in their life. And if you're a mean person out there, let's not be mean to people. Let's not bully. Let's not be unkind. Because you're impacting people in the worst way possible. Figure out why you're bullying and have a little bit more peace in your life so you're not doing that to other people.
Well, on that note, and a much more hopeful note, thank you for spending some time sharing this grief support group, a unique place, a safe place, and I wish you well.
Yes, thank you,
Kate.
So much.
I need to eat and run, but I got to